But
please don't put this in the show.
Fine.
I mean, you can make that the title, and then people will not get it. But
bucket of squirrels.
Bucket of squirrels.
Bucket of squirrels.
Done.
I
please don't put this in the show. In the show.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 379 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined by Seth Miller and Foz Mamoon. Gentlemen.
Good evening.
Yes, we're recording this a little early this week. So
it's almost like it's last week.
Which, yeah, I mean,
tomorrow's news today.
Yeah, what could happen is that all the stories break tomorrow. That's theoretical. I mean, that's what always happens to us whenever we do record a show. So
it's okay. There's always more news. We'll get to it later. Or not, because, you know.
Or not. China Eastern. This is a little bit of follow-up from last week. The CVR, the cockpit voice recorder, is now being analyzed by the NTSB in D.C.
Yeah, that's a little surprising to me. All the initial reports had it being analyzed in Beijing. When they found it, they suggested it might be damaged.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the physical, like the I guess the memory, the storage portion broke off of the collector piece. We talked about that a little last week, and there was concern about it. But apparently, they actually flew it to DC for more in-depth analysis. So,
do you know? I mean, it's the cockpit voice recorder. Do you know why they didn't do this same thing to the flight data recorder?
No.
Yeah, I find that
it was found a couple days later. So who knows?
Yeah, I find that piece interesting. Yeah,
I mean, it's you. I would assume you'd want to do it in the home country because if they're speaking the native language in the cockpit, right? Well, maybe not on the radio, but there's no guarantee they're always speaking English.
Yeah, I believe the CAAC has representatives as part of the process. So the other thing that came up is the NTSB sending people to China to do the work. I think they didn't leave until Friday.
Well, okay.
Where we thought they'd left a little early, and so it's possible that that charter flight that came to pick them up either was just sitting around waiting for everything to be sorted, or maybe it brought the CVR or something else. There's obviously a lot going on and a lot of moving parts we don't have all the data for, they realized it was, you know, damaged badly enough early enough that they dispatched it sooner. But I believe that they sent their own people to accompany the investigation for relatively obvious reasons.
Yeah. And I assume they're doing the forensic investigation of the airplane, like the putting it kind of back together piece by piece as much as they can in China. I would assume that's the case.
I would assume so as well. I don't think they found pieces big enough to reassemble, really, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. Oh, boy. Well, I mean, it's just a kind of a wait game now, right? Like, it's kind of a wait and see what they find and what they release. And I wonder, I don't think the NTSB will release anything without the Chinese authorities.
They can't.
I mean, giving them good
legally,
order, right?
It's legal is a weird phrase there, but legally they're not supposed to under ICAO rules.
Okay. So only the Chinese authorities can.
As the state governing the incident, the Chinese authorities are responsible for all release of communications.
Gotcha. Cool.
The U.S. as the state of manufacture and the state of certification are just participants or observers who have been asked to help.
Yep. Okay. New topics this week. Let's talk about the New Mexico City Airport. I find this whole topic fascinating. There was an article in the New York Times, which made my wife bring it up to me. She was like, have you heard about this New Mexico City Airport that's got built? And I was like, you mean the disaster that's taking place? So this is not the airport that was originally slated for Mexico City. This is the budget version. It's about 30 miles outside of the city.
Yeah, it was like it's an old Air Force base, and it was like, I guess it too was already half built when they canceled the other half built one.
Yes.
So yay. But it is out of the way. It has no good connection transit sort of options, which, you know, in the United States we're used to, but most of the rest of the world is actually pretty smart about that sort of thing. I don't quite get it.
And there's no, currently there's no running water at the airport.
Minor details.
Details.
Don't bother with
trifles. This is the antithesis to Berlin, right? Like, this is like
had open
airport
water.
Well, yeah, but also like nothing's working.
Whoa!
Nothing worked it in Berlin either. I don't understand why you're suggesting.
But they didn't open. So different. They didn't open.
wait a minute. At Berlin, they couldn't fight the fires.
This is true.
Or in Mexico City, they can't fight the fires. At Berlin, they couldn't find them.
The alarm wasn't going off in the right place. Yeah, I mean, I think the reason I call it the antithesis to Berlin is Berlin, they held off the opening. It just felt like it was never going to open. This Mexico City airport, they just opened it with like things not working. And they're like, eh, whatever. It'll the roads to the airport aren't completely built yet. So
you don't need roads for connecting traffic.
You don't need roads where we're going. Yeah, well, for connecting traffic. But there's like one airline flying out of this airport now.
I mean, you know, I think this is a challenge, you know, because Mexico City, the legacy airport, if we'll call it that, is very convenient to the city itself.
Yes.
And you know, we've seen over the decades when they open new airports out in the middle of nowhere, unless you close the original one, the new one never really takes off.
Yeah.
So the question is, will they close the old one?
I don't think they can, the way things are right now. I mean, the state that this airport is in.
The plan was to have three, I thought. There was this new one and another small new one, or TLC, was it Toluca?
Yeah.
Out west of town, those were going to be like the three, and they were sort of supposed to like split all the load between them. But again, going back, this is like, why does DWC have no traffic in Dubai and DXB has all the traffic? Because that's where everybody flies to. And until someone makes a decision in Abu Dhabi, it would be the other one, and DWC is sort of halfway in between, until someone makes the decision and builds the infrastructure such that this one giant airport with six parallel runways out in the middle of nowhere and, you know, whatever, is going to be for everybody, it's not going to happen. And so slots at Mexico City International, what's it, Benitez?
The main city
airport. The main one is going to remain in demand, unless and until it's sort of people are forced out, and then you start running into weird legal issues of like, could the government say, okay, you three airlines have to go somewhere else and Aeromexico stays here? Or Aeromexico and its partners get to stay here, and like, right, you have a SkyTeam airport and a Star Alliance airport and a One World airport?
Like China?
A little bit. But those were, you know, again, that's, you know, the Beijing situation, right? Like, or was it Shanghai? No. Beijing.
Beijing.
Yeah.
TXK?
Yeah.
Whatever. Beijing. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of. That was an interesting one because like it wasn't entirely clear. Some airlines wanted to move out there, it seemed, and they were sort of being held back, but because it was sort of a nicer terminal, maybe. I don't know.
But that's the crazy thing is like the original, the multi-billion-dollar airport that was being built in Mexico City and then abandoned was only a few miles northeast of the current Benito Juarez airport. Like it's really close. If you look at a map, it's really close. So leading to believe that could have, you know, extended a subway line, because I mean, Mexico City Airport is connected by the
very nicely on the subway.
Yeah. And this new airport is not.
So and I don't know. There's like a little walk maybe, but it was pretty good.
Yeah. There's like two things. There's like the subway, and I think there is a bus connection. Yeah. The subway is like just on the outside of the airport, but there's also I can't remember if it's like a bus terminal.
Yeah, it's a few minutes. You have to walk a couple minutes from Terminal 1. But it's,
yeah, exactly.
And then if you want to get across Terminal 2, you take their sort of weird internal shuttle that sometimes ran some days.
Yes, exactly.
Also, if you search for Mexico City Subway Airport, you get ads for the subway restaurant in the terminal.
But I think it's wild. I mean, this new airport is not close and is not connected with any public
transit. Hey, listen, Istanbul opened a brand new massive airport with no connection.
I just don't see airlines the way it is right now. I just don't see airlines wanting to fly there. So,
I mean, until they have to, or until they can't get slots at the real one and want to expand traffic, I think it'll be, you know, you'll see low cost carriers do it, you know, a la Europe, save money, and because they can have access.
Yeah.
Right. That's why Han is Frankfurt. That's why Beauvais is Paris. That's why Charleroi is Brussels.
Yeah.
Couldn't get them. It's why Stansted and Luton and, you know, you write all the airports where you couldn't get slots. Airlines that had passengers who were willing to be close enough would deal with it.
Yeah. On the flip side, there was an editorial in the Seattle Times that talks about SeaTac, and it talks about the new International Rivals facility and some of the improvements, but just kind of how bad it is at Seattle or at SeaTac right now.
It's basically complaining that even with all the improvements, it's not going to be enough.
Yeah. And just some concerns, and there's been different locations recommended. Arlington, Bremerton, Toledo, Everett, Shelton, and Gig Harbor are a few of the locations where they would put this. Everett, I mean, I can't imagine going to Everett to fly out of Seattle.
I tried to do it from Tacoma.
Well, yeah, that's true.
That's the TAC part, let us not forget.
I know. But SeaTac is not really Tacoma. It's like northern Tacoma. Let's be clear.
It is Seattle.
It's southern Seattle. Yeah, it's Tukwila, basically.
But I mean, would that be much different than Denver in the 90s?
And that's true. That's true.
Right?
Like where they had to move everybody out.
Yeah, in 95, there was nothing that far out. Right? You got to where the Stapleton was. That was on close to the edge.
Yeah. And I think it's part of it's the geography of Seattle, right? Like if you're, you know, west of Lake Washington, you don't really have an option except to go through downtown. And if you're east of it, you can kind of skirt around some of the traffic, but the traffic's still pretty bad.
I mean, you always have the option of going east and around.
Yeah, but I don't know that it saves you any time.
It probably does in Seattle.
I think there's some good points, right? Like we've talked about it on the show. If you've flown through Seattle in the last couple of years, even during COVID, it is crowded and uncomfortable to navigate. I don't know. Have you guys? I don't know, Seth. Have you flown through Seattle?
Not a while.
Yeah,
I was supposed to go this summer, but that got scrubbed. I mean, it was. Yes, it's been a few years for me. I don't know. I guess my response to that would be in every scenario. Yes, building an actual new greenfield airport in a major metro area ain't gonna happen.
Yeah,
just like you start thinking about environmental work, all the certifications and permitting and everything else that has to happen. Even places that already have a runway in the ground that want to expand or right, I mean, become, you know, expand commercial service or add commercial service to an existing, you know, Air Force base kind of thing or whatever, former Air Force base. Even that is hard enough.
Yeah.
In so many ways, like to increase noise, increase whatever, traffic, all that stuff. The environmental assessments are a pain in the ass. I can't imagine, unless you go far enough out that you're truly, like, how far do you have to go to be able to buy up enough farmland to cross this point about the middle of nowhere Denver?
Yep.
And then it certainly is inconvenient to everyone at the time, whether it, you know, remains inconvenient to everybody over time, TBD, but in some ways it becomes a question of, do you deal with secondary, you know, is this an argument for more secondary airports and point-to-point service versus hubs?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question.
But I think the way to address that problem before you can drive secondary traffic, I think the bigger and more obvious solution is to limit the number of small planes, force an upgauge.
Well, I mean, Alaska's kind of doing that to themselves.
Yeah, Alaska is, but I mean, there's, you know, but even then, right, they can only upgauge to a 321, and that's only until they get rid of them.
True.
And the MAX 10s will be bigger if those ever get certified and never get delivered. But
those are years away.
Yes. No, that's a fair point. I mean, that destroys the hub concept.
But it doesn't necessarily. It reduces your number of banks. It does not have to reduce the kill of this hub concept, right? I think in some cases we are just like we see what some of the airlines are doing with just squatting slots.
Sure. Right?
That shouldn't really be permitted because that's just a waste of resources.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. I am fortunate to not live in a city that, you know, sort of am like Manchester from a major's perspective. If I fly out of Manchester or even out of Portland, Portland is more mainline than it used to be, but like Manchester gets a lot of small regional jets.
But I'm not saying eliminate them, but limit them, right? Instead of having five flights, you know, in a 4-hour window, make it three flights in a 5-hour window or two
mm-hmm.
flights.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get my hourly shuttle anymore.
No, you don't need an hourly shuttle from Manchester.
I think the most, you know, there's some of the places being talked about were Bremerton and Gig Harbor. And I knew where Bremerton was, and it kind of struck me as funny putting it. So you guys need to look at a map. So it's kind of straight west of Seattle across the bay, kind of over by the Puget Sound, like over that side. Like it's on the other side of Puget Sound, basically. That's Bremerton. And there's some open land there, but it would be funny to build an airport there because – really the only way to reach it would be a ferry. So like that would be kind of cool.
Wow. That's like, yeah. How do you like, how do you make that practical?
Just like you have a giant ferry and everyone parks in Seattle, I guess.
Well, the long-term parking is, it's like Ketchikan. You park in Seattle and then you take a ferry to the airport.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. and then the other one is Gig Harbor, and Gig Harbor is down by Tacoma. It is like just on the other side of the water from Tacoma. So it actually has a road to it. And there's land, it's farmland out there. So I could see them potentially doing something there, but that's even worse than SeaTac. Like, I don't know how you make that one work. Cause that is,
I got it, guys. This is easy.
Oh, with the eVTOLs, right?
Ooh, you're going to go that angle. I was going to go, underground. Hyperloop. I was going to go Hyperloop Underground.
I think there's an interesting concept to talk about here, and maybe like the Bay Area is a good example. Like you have San Jose, you've got Oakland, and you've got SFO. And then do you have anything else north of that? I guess you got Santa Rosa north of that.
Santa Rosa,
yeah. And then Sacramento. Like, could you do something like that where, you know, you turn
with, like, I don't know, SeaTac and Everett and Renton and or Boeing Field, like,
could you, yeah, could you have? Yeah, could you do that with the things you already have? It feels like Payne, Everett is a little small, and
but even at its size, it wasn't able to get traffic.
True. They couldn't feed enough traffic up there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you would think with the drive from up there down to Seattle, the connection wouldn't be such a big deal for people going somewhere beyond, you know, San Francisco.
I think part of the challenge for Everett, and I enjoyed my one trip out there when I did it on the inaugural, but the number of flights was necessarily limited, again, by concessions to the local neighborhood, I think, right? Mm. Never mind that we have a Boeing plant here that flies big planes in and out all the time for testing. We don't want commercial service. We don't want 50 or 100 flights a day. They capped it at 24.
Yeah, classic NIMBYism, right?
And so if you're an airline that wants to establish service and grow, it's going to be very hard to grow into a market where you are artificially capped, especially capped that low, right? If you were a Velo and wanted a new West Coast base, sure. If you're, like, you think of new LCCs, you think of anyone else who wants to show up. But even Southwest, when it had slots, they only got 6, I think. And they're like, yeah, forget this. And they gave them to Alaska Airlines, not quite in exchange for more slots at DCA. But, I feel like if there's that artificial cap there, it's really hard to justify growing and investing in building up service because, you can't actually grow.
Yeah. I'm just worried that it's like lipstick on a pig at SeaTac. Right. Like it's not going to solve the problem long term. It is still going to be a mess. I mean, part of the issue with SeaTac is the train system between the terminals. That's part of the issue. And having to connect trains, like, that's idiotic, having to connect trains. It was great in the 80s, terrible now.
If they would just, it's not that far. So I don't know why they don't just put a walkway in.
It isn't, honestly. From the north side of, what is that, D? Is that D or C up there? I can't remember. It is not a far walk. Maybe 100 yards.
I think it's B and C over there. I think it goes, yeah. And the internet, what's currently the International, the South Pier, that's also not a big walk.
Yeah. But let's build a giant bridge that people have to go up and down escalators into this new arrivals facility.
You loved it when LaGuardia did that.
Honestly, if we go back to the show, we did talk about this. The curb to plane experience for me sucks at LaGuardia. No.
Oh, yeah. The old one was great. You could be from your seat to the curb in less than 10 minutes.
Now it's like a maze. You got to go up some escalators, down some escalators, cross a bridge, over some more escalators, outside, wait in a cab line.
Well, you know. That's what happens when you hire an architect that was inspired by M.C. Escher.
I mean, it's gorgeous. Don't get me wrong. I think that's what I'm saying is, like, it's awesome to have gorgeous airports.
But the problem is these gorgeous airports are coming at the cost of inconvenience to drag people to walk and spend more time in the terminal to take their dollars.
Yeah, or just to, like, slow people down.
And airports have forgotten that they're supposed to be catering to the public and not the corporations.
But, pause, those concessions bring in lots of money for the airport itself.
But if they didn't spend so much money making these things so complicated, they wouldn't need so much money.
It's a chicken and egg problem, right?
Yeah. And some of the salaries these people make should not be salaries they make in public positions either.
Yeah.
Inflation.
So, I mean, I think it again comes down to a problem of, one, SeaTac is limited by space, right? Like, there's nowhere else to build another terminal at SeaTac, really.
Underground.
Yeah, exactly. No windows. In the middle of, put it in the middle of the runways.
Like, Hyperloop. Build it downtown, and you get in the little car, and you roll up, and you're at the gate.
Okay. Maybe you're onto something.
It'll be like Hong Kong.
Literally, that's what Dubai wanted to do.
It'll be like Hong Kong, where you check in Kowloon.
That's the other thing that blows my mind at SeaTac. Can we talk about that? The train station is out past the parking garage.
Yeah, like you have to walk through the garage to get to the train station.
Yes, like let's make this. Let's invite people to use public transit to get to the airport, but they have to walk a mile and a half to get to it. Like let's it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
When it's like a couple million dollars a mile. They saved a couple million dollars. They ran out of money.
But they build a bigger parking garage, too, at the same time. Because that brings in cash, right? So
exactly.
Anyway, I'm nailing this topic into the ground. BA had a pilot who lied about his flying experience to secure a job. And then he was caught. And then he is now facing jail time for doing it. So he lied about how many hours he had. I think he was flying for Stobart Air and then City Flyer as well. And he claimed to have flown 1,600 hours as a captain and got caught doing that.
How can you not validate this before you hire a pilot? This is not the first story like this.
I know.
I mean, you can obviously validate if they have a real license or not, which this guy did, right? And he was a licensed pilot. So that's – and there we have talked about stories where that's not the case. Where, how do you validate the number of hours? Isn't it just like I wrote it in a logbook and I signed it? And so then
– yeah. No. And that's what he's saying. That's what happened is he manipulated the logbook while working for the previous employer.
But don't you
put a one in front of every route? Like after a couple of days, you're like, oh, yeah, this flight on Stobart from Belfast City to Isle of Man was 14 hours.
Yeah.
But like, don't you do a reference check?
Yeah, he only flew.
I guess that's the real point is how many, you know, there's a normal number of hours flown per day or per month. Like there's a cap, right? I mean, in the U.S. there is. So there's like 70 something hours a month.
That's a basic math problem, right?
Right. If he's only been a licensed pilot for X months and his total number of hours are two times whatever the max is, something doesn't add up.
Yep.
Maybe he took a break and came back. I don't know. You'd think there would be a good way to track that down, but I don't know.
I don't get it. But he's getting a year of prison. So anyway.
Is this going to be like when the FAA changed the rules for people who lie about their medicals? And so they get their license immediately revoked, but the FAA actually recently reduced the amount of time that must pass before they're allowed to reapply. I mean, for me, it was a 1-year minimum suspension and now it's 9 months.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Because that seemed like a smart choice? I don't quite get that one.
No, it does not seem like a smart choice. Oh, boy. The Alaska Airlines pilots were picketing today, which today we're recording this on Friday, April 1st. No, this is not a April Fool's joke. This really happened. And it's caused quite a few cancellations from Portland.
So Cause is a very strong word there. I'm encouraging not to use that.
Okay. It led to.
At best is correlated with.
Okay. It correlates with a bunch of cancellations today.
Right, this is one of those fun ones. At best, what you're going to be able to prove is that pilots didn't pick up as much overtime today as maybe they could have.
Yes. I think also I heard a rumor that Alaska is actually suffering from just flight attendant shortages because of COVID.
That would not surprise me.
And they are having to cancel flights because of that as well. So the pilots were getting asking for better, I guess, working.
They're well into their negotiations for a new contract, and it's not the contract. The negotiations are what they typically are when these sorts of environment are not going well. So,
yeah. Do you think they'll get what they want?
I don't think any party ever gets exactly what they want in a union contract negotiation, but
that means it's a good, it was a good,
right.
Negotiation, right?
Yeah, it will sort of come together eventually. It always does. The question is how much pain is there along the way?
Yeah.
But,
and the protests are going on in Portland, Seattle, Anchorage, San Francisco, and Los Angeles.
All them hubs.
Yep. And so you can expect that. And I think they protested last week or picketed last week in New York City.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. I wonder if that was. I'm eating a brownie too, if my voice sounds funny. I wonder if that was slightly related to Investor Day type stuff. There's been
it was. Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was outside of their Investor Day. So
I mean, there's also a problem right now. There's not enough pilots staffing at the airlines. Right, we've seen all the regionals scale back their ability to fly. We talked about this last week. Before SkyWest trying to get out of all the EAS markets, 30 of them or something. Like, there's a lot of that stuff going on. I was talking to a Delta pilot the other day who said they couldn't. That they were asked by, they had to ask their HR to stop hiring out of the regionals because they were taking too many pilots from mainline out of regionals and shutting that down.
Hmm.
I think Avelo just said that it was going to start working for or looking for E3 visa pilots, which is a special visa category for Australian pilots to come fly in the United States.
Interesting.
That lets them have a permit, you know, the work permit and whatever to live here and do that. It's expensive to become a pilot. And it's a lot of upfront costs for very shitty work conditions for the first few years and salary, certainly, makes it really hard to justify. I mean, I think there's a sort of news out that Southwest is partnering with a local university to try to get more African-American pilots into the flow. But even still, it's requiring a university degree, which seems a strange requirement to me for being a pilot.
Yeah, a college degree is an interesting one.
Right. In my mind, it's much more of a vocational, or can be a vocational education rather than a traditional university education.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know.
I think people just need to be aware of the Alaska thing for sure.
It's good. It's good to know that they're operationally struggling to meet, you know, and there have been a lot of cancellations over the past couple months, honestly.
Yeah.
But I would say at best it's a correlation, and I don't think saying that the pilots picketing is somehow causing the canceled flights. Like they're not picketing because they were scheduled to work and they didn't show up, instead walking a picket line.
Yeah. Yeah. There's other things at play as well. So
yeah.
Thank you for the correction, Seth. What is going on with Delta and their
ward changes?
Yeah, ward changes and flight changes. And
yeah, it's good stuff. You can earn more than 75,000 points on a ticket if you spend enough money. you're not buying full fare?
No. But I mean, it's cool, right? They're now saying if you...
Yeah, you earn what, like at the top tier elite, which is diamond for them, I think you earn 11 points per dollar. And so if you were buying a ticket more than $6,900 base fare, you were tapped out on earnings.
Yep.
And so now you get to earn every point you deserve. And the last year, I feel like they made the change. It was early last year. Maybe it was early 2020. They made the change that you earned MQMs flying on reward tickets.
Now, this, I think, is a big deal.
I think that's a bigger deal than the 75K thing.
Honestly. Yeah, I mean, the 75K thing is great for people who fly business class paid fares or whatever.
On other people's money, yeah.
On other people's, you know, dime. But the MQM earning, the elite mile earning on award travel is very intriguing to me.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah,
I made the choice to go fly your airline. The fact that I paid with points instead of new dollars, it's still a revenue. It's still treated as a revenue ticket in all of your systems. So why, you know, in most of your systems, why not give me the credit for that at least a little bit?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that ties more in with the dynamic pricing now, right?
Yeah.
It was different when it was fixed pricing, because then you were getting a potential deal. But now that the redemptions are getting closer and closer, being tied to the cost of the ticket,
yeah,
it is just another currency.
Yeah, and I mean the deal thing, I sort of get that. Like it was or it wasn't, depending, right? There's plenty of people buying, you know, what we would call easy pass back in the day or whatever, right? They were definitely not getting a deal. Should they have gotten credit, but people who on saver tickets didn't? I don't know.
If you're buying a easy pass ticket, you know, 50,000 points, what was the revenue ticket at that point, right? It still wasn't in line.
Yeah. I mean, the revenue ticket could have been any. I mean, I think that's part of the problem is the range of prices the revenue tickets were.
Yeah.
It didn't tie real well. There was a point where they sort of tried to sort that, but they didn't tie especially closely. It wasn't like somewhere, you know, you could say for some airline like JetBlue is like between a half and a 1.3 cents per point, depending on how expensive the ticket is. But there wasn't necessarily that tight a range. It could have been, you know, 4 cents per point. It could have been 0.8. You never know.
And what do you think, like, have they explained what the earnings are going to be for the MQM, like, for tickets that are made with...
So MQMs are still one-to-one. Those are mileage-based, not, right? Not dollar-based?
I thought they were.
No, I don't think MQMs are.
Oh. So this, I mean...
No, MQMs might be, actually.
Yeah, I mean...
Million milers is not.
Yeah. So I'm going to look at real quick.
Just... MQMs are still distance.
Oh, and they have medallion qualification dollars in MQDs.
You get MQMs, MQSs, and MQDs. So you get miles, dollars, or miles, segments, and dollars.
Gotcha. So you still have to spend money with them. That's the way, yes, I'm reading this. But you can earn more miles. So if you spend a lot of money but don't earn the MQMs based on that spend, you can still, with award travel, you can still get there. So this is different than United, right? Like, it's PQPs, and which is just, it's just pure dollar base. So I don't know that United will ever go to this direction.
When the only thing United would do with it at this point for the earning on award tickets would be for million miler status.
Yeah.
Potentially. And that's, I mean, nice, but I don't think that's going to move the needle for a lot of people.
Well, until the next economic downturn where they have to pivot.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting stuff. I mean, I think it's great for Delta Flyers overall.
Yeah. I think these are two reasonable improvements. I'm a fan.
Yep. Tell me about the new New Zealand business class seat, Seth, or the whoopsie.
Well, it turns out if you file documents with the U.S. Department of Transportation for approval to have a special dispensation for not having movable armrests before the actual product is announced, you might not be happy with the fact that people can read those.
Did you get a cease and desist?
I didn't get a cease and desist. I got a very polite request to remove the story, though.
And what did you do?
I responded saying no thank you. I'm very sorry to hear that you're unhappy about this. I understand it's not the way you wanted the news to come out. It is a public document published by the United States government.
You should ask them to remove that. How'd that go over?
Eventually, I was provided with a formal statement from the company.
Oh.
It's an interesting... It seems the NTSB is actually looking at both the CBR and the FDR.
Oh, nice.
The flight data recorder as well, according to Bloomberg.
Okay.
Whereas the early report on Friday afternoon was just Reuters talking about the CBR. The new seats, they go from a 111 to a 121 layout. It's a herringbone, so you're facing towards the aisle, not towards the window, which a lot of people are annoyed about.
Mm-hmm.
And the first row will have a door, mini suite. It will be called the Lux or Lux. Premium business premium looks kind of thing.
Don't like that name, but okay.
You don't like that name?
No, but continue.
It looks like a nice seat to me. It seems like it's going to be a new product. So that's nice. Only time will tell, just how narrow and how the footwell works. That's always a challenge with these, cause it's a weird triangle footwell, but they say it's like an 80-inch bed, which is pretty long.
And so you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, but the old Air New Zealand business class seats were facing the aisle, correct?
They were also facing the aisle, yes.
So people are upset that they didn't still change is. That.
Yeah. People seem to prefer the reverse herringbone layout.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. It's hard to look out the window.
It is definitely harder to look out the window. From a privacy perspective, and like, I guess you see people walking by. I don't know.
I always find facing the window to be more private than facing the aisle.
Yeah, it creates the illusion of privacy more. Yeah.
See, I guess I sort of like to be face, like in a restaurant, I don't like having my back to the room. I like facing the room to see what's going on around me.
Yeah.
So I sort of get that, but maybe it's I'm the
like
wrong
a,
person.
To, you're like, yeah. You're like a mobster. Huh?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Hey, listen.
Do we know, is this going to be installed on all the planes, and do we have a date or of when?
787-9s to start. They're going to be retrofits. The official statement that is that the renderings are of an early design, they're being worked on in the R&D lab to sort of demonstrate the process. So it's all about accessibility. So it's actually demonstrating the process for moving passengers between, an aisle wheelchair and the business class seat.
Mm,
okay. And how that process would be affected for a passenger like that. And so the Air New Zealand statement was sort of two-faced in the, oh, it's just an early rendering. It's not really the full thing yet. And also we plan on starting to install them in April, at the end of April. So just a few weeks from now, the install should happen. I don't know how quickly they're planning to renovate or, how many of the 787-9s will get this, but at least some. I would imagine it's useful for some of the longer routes. That's the other thing is it's 42 business class seats where the current cabin tops out at 27. And they have two configs today.
Yeah. So more seats, which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Delta's A321neo first routes. What's the story? What are we
Boston, baby.
Are you going to be on it?
I looked. It was like $320 to go one way to San Francisco. And it's so
not
probably not
terrible, but not great. Yeah,
I don't need to go to San Francisco, and it's sort of right up against. It's about 10 days before I've got a 26-day trip to plan that I'm leaving on, so I'm not super excited about extra travel right then.
Yeah, makes sense.
San Francisco's the first route; they do two a day, and they're actually gonna get both.
Oh wow!
So that's kind of cool. Like they're gonna have both flights starting with that. Denver, San Diego, and Seattle. will be the other three markets, I think, out of Boston that'll get it next. Do you know that Boston to Seattle's block time is over 7 hours?
That makes, yeah.
Excuse me,
makes,
Boston, San Francisco. Boston, San Francisco.
Boston, San Francisco, so, yeah.
It makes sense. And it's an hour longer than New York, but.
Yeah. I thought Boston to San Francisco for Delta was one of the premium routes. Am I wrong on that?
United did, I think, at one point.
Okay.
United did at one point, and I thought Delta was, it's come and gone.
Okay. Okay. But Mint is there pretty much all the time.
Yes.
On that one. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, cool. I mean, I think it's makes the routes make sense. More seats than a 737 and more efficient. I think it's makes a lot of sense for some of these. So,
yeah.
Anything else you guys want to talk about?
I'm good.
Yeah, cool. I'm good.
Well, to our listeners, thank you for listening to the show. You can hear a little bit extra. We're going to talk about Seth's travel plans and where he should connect. And maybe we'll talk about some elite status stuff, if I feel like it, in the bonus show. And if you want to listen to that, become a Patreon subscriber. But yeah, we appreciate you listening to the show. You can find us on Twitter at @dotslines, moredotsmorelines.com. And leave a comment, tweet us. We'd like to hear from you. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Catch you next time.